Welcome to a special episode of Breezy Breakfast Radio Hour. Today we focus on stories and storytelling, the ones that we hear and the ones that we read. Tea and Tales, co-founded by Trevor Barton of the Guelph Enabling Garden and host Brian Holstein, will be returning to Riverside Park this summer, each Friday from June 17th to September 9th. Bring a lawn chair and a mug for free coffee and iced tea. Be sure to arrive before the start time of 10:30 a.m. to secure a good spot on the bank of Spee River. Brian Holstein talks about the importance of storytelling in our lives, the history of Tea and Tales, and the new and improved post-COVID program. Trevor Burn gives us a history of the garden and some plans for its future. Stephen Leacock Award nominee James Gordon is on the show today. The Ark of the Oven Mitt is a concept novel and CD about the misadventures of a traveling minstrel wandering the hinterland of Canada. Several attendees let us know what they are reading and what they plan to read this summer. There are enough recommendations to fill your summer reading bookshelf. Over to our moderator, Morgan.
Good morning, everybody. It is Thursday, June 2nd. If you're in Ontario, it is Election Day. Please make sure that if you haven't already cast your ballot, you do so today. And that's the end of the political talk for today. On Breezy Breakfast, today we are talking tea and tales and breezy books. As it is storytelling we're talking about today for Tea and Tales, I thought it was appropriate to kind of highlight the fact that Indigenous storytelling is something that has been around for time immemorial. On Turtle Island, winter is the traditional time for storytelling. And in this area of Guelph, we are on the traditional lands of the Attawateran, the Anishinaabe, and the Haudenosaunee, which is made up of the Mohawk, Oneida, Onondaga, Cayuga, and Seneca. Tea and Tales is kind of, I believe, along the tradition of the old medieval bard, which ended up being replaced by troubadours and minstrels. One of the things that I do know is oral storytelling has been the way that our histories have been passed down through the ages. And it is a tradition that I am glad that is still being taken care of today by people like our own Brian Holstein and others that he brings into our city to regale us with stories from around the world, I believe, along the banks of the Speed River here in Guelph. Our guests today are Brian Holstein of the Guelph Storytelling Guild, I believe, or Guelph Guild of Storytellers, as well as Trevor Barton, who is in charge of our Enabling Gardens. We're going to learn a little bit more about the Enabling Gardens, as well as what Tea and Tales is all about, and a little bit of an interview with Brian and Trevor. Then we'll be moving on to an open discussion about what we're looking forward to reading this summer, or what we have read and would encourage others to read this summer. So Brian, I'd really like to start with, what is Tea and Tales? How did it start?
Well, I'm going to leave that how did it start to Trevor, because it was an email from this T. Barton who got the whole thing going. So we'll leave that. But Tea and Tales has evolved from, I think, 5 Fridays of storytelling of locals, Bev Mattson, the late Vince Wall, the late Ann Estel, and a bunch of us who would tell stories for an hour on a Friday morning. Seniors would arrive. In the very first year, I like to tell the story of Ann Estel showing up to tell, and there were 3 people in the audience. And a lot of people would have said, to heck with this, but not Ann. Like a true teller, she continued on, and it's grown. Last year, thanks to people like James, I always like to have James tell and sing at the beginning of the season because he packs them in. 150 people, I think, is our record of coming to the gardens. We're now up to 13 weeks. It is free. The idea is everyone out there has worked sometime during their life. And when a senior retires, sometimes they get a gold watch, stock options, golden parachute, whatever. Others get an insincere slap on the back and saying we must do lunch sometime. But regardless of who or what, this is a thank you to them. It's free. They bring their own lawn chair. They bring their own mug for the coffee that Trevor brews or for the iced tea. The whole thing's free. They want to give a donation, that's fine. And the tellers, we've expanded, as I said, to 13 weeks this year. And a lot of new tellers coming in. Cecilia Vincenzo is from Kitchener, but originally from Ecuador. Maria del Carmen Odanzo is from South America. They're both new, but we've got people like Sarah Abusara, who's, this will be about her fifth year here. She's already told in Sarajevo, she's an invited guest there every year. We have, who is it? Norman Perrin, who is an invited guest every year to Marrakesh in Morocco as a teller. And now he's off to England to tell there as an invited guest. So these people are, they're not, oh golly shucks, do I have to kind of tellers. They're professional tellers. We have James Gordon. I mean, how more professional can you get than James? Don't answer that, Phil. Okay. And a whole bunch of other people, new and from all over. We have one person who flies in every year from Wisconsin to tell. Now, mind you, she comes to visit her family, but she times it so that she and her mother, Bev Mattson, can tell at Tea and Tales. It's one of the most satisfying things that I've done, and it's all thanks to Trevor.
Well, with that, it sounds like it is absolutely an international happening, and storytelling is something that is very important even today with our digital age. So Trevor, what is the Enabling Garden and what brought you to reach out and suggest having Tea and Tales there?
Well, thank you, Morgan. First, I'll give you a little bit of history. The Guelph Enabling Garden was actually a millennial project back in 1999. We met, I was a City of Guelph employee at the time, and we met out at one of the clubs, and what would we do to celebrate the millennial? And I was sitting at a table. I came from the wet-dry facility with an interest in compost and soil and gardening, and the people that were around the table, we were trying to, what do we have in common? And it ended up being gardening, sharing the joy of gardening. And we just talked about it. And my co-founder of the garden, it was Betty Richard, who was with Disability Services at the time. And we just brought this idea forward. And I swear it took a millennium to build this garden. That was in 1999. And we finally opened in 2005. And we're located at Riverside Park. And Phil and James are actually our landlords because it's the City of Guelph property at Riverside Park. Wonderful landlords. They don't charge us anything. We're an autonomous board as well, too, registered as a charity. And we officially opened in 2005. And I'm the chair, and have been off and on the chair, treasurer, just many things. We have a board of 10 people. 2 years into the program, we thought maybe we should expand our horticultural therapy. I should explain what we offer. The garden is a space, a destination point we consider within a public park that offers free horticultural therapy. Programming, workshops, sessions, teaching opportunities, but it's a community hub. It's a destination point for people within the garden. And we have 20,000 visitors a year, I should say pre-COVID, that would stroll through the garden. And and we were trying to promote it further. So I reached out. I had heard about the Storytellers Guild, and yes, I sent that email over to Brian, and we didn't know each other at the time. Now we're good friends and compatriots. And we I'd asked if they would like to perform in the garden. We couldn't pay them, but we do have a space that is on a bus route, free parking, or sorry, lots of parking, and just steps away from the Guelph Senior Center, Evergreen, up just down to the south of us. And 16 years ago, we hit it off. Mind you, we had three people and four people in attendance, which if we fast forward to 2019, there's a good year to speak about. We have over 150 people every Friday morning from 10:30 to about noon thereabouts. But the people are showing up at 9:30, 9 o'clock sometimes to get a space with anticipation every week as well, too. And if we're blessed with the summer of wonderful Friday morning weather, we're outside along the river, as Brian has described, in historic Riverside Park. And from that group of people, recruitment. This is where our volunteers come. We have over 70 volunteers who commit their time to the garden, as well as participants in a horticultural therapy program, which again is free. We are funded through United Way and the City of Guelph well-being grants or community grants, and we originally built with Trillium Fund money. So you and I who spend our money on the lottery, that's where it goes into. And we initially built the garden. It's still in phase one. We just haven't been able to expand further as much as we'd like to. But there's so much demand on for services that, and one of the reasons, or sorry, one of the examples of that is expanding Tea and Tales for an additional 2 weeks to get to that magic number of a baker's dozen. And that's where Brian has been recruiting people. We started because we had a virtual season last year. We started in September of last year to plan for 2022, and I'm so pleased to be able to offer in person Tea and Tales starting on June 17th. So long history between our partnership with the Storytellers Guild. But a lot of the people we I should have mentioned the garden is a Communities in Bloom judging site as well too, and Guelph used to compete at Nations in Bloom and Communities in Bloom. We used to have the judges by as well too. This is the showpiece. We call it the jewel. One of the jewels in Guelph's crown is this little garden along the river, which I couldn't be more proud of. And we do have international recognition, and the Garden Council of Canada promotes this little space, and we offer a number of tours, and also we do a considerable amount of outreach for horticultural therapy or landscape architecture interns that come and work in the garden as well, and just to grow the space, if you like. So it is exciting space, and thank you for this today. We're really trying to promote. Let's get 200 people in the garden on a Friday morning. I'd like to see that as well.
Well, I can tell you, Trevor, I'm going to be one of those people this year. I was not of the mindset of attending last year virtually. I was kind of all zoomed out. And that was one of the things that I wanted to talk to both of you about is, you've mentioned a lot of the attendees are seniors, and having this in the Enabling Gardens so close to the Evergreen Center is a good way of having that group there. So it sounds like the majority of people that go are seniors, but I also saw something about children's focus. And then I'm really interested in what did COVID force you guys to do? And is there any really good stuff that came out of that? Maybe we'll start with Brian on that one.
Okay, fine. Yeah, several thoughts came to mind as you were talking about that. It is mainly focused, well, it's a service for seniors, but anybody can come along. Mind you, it's not really a place for a young child because we can't, we there's no pause button and there's no rewind button. And the tellers, and I notice Jay Wilson is here too, he will be telling. The tellers are human and they can be distracted at times. So it's there is a certain decor, if you like, when telling this. Because of so many people, they've had to expand back, and with the sound system we had, a lot of people couldn't hear. So we've invested in a new sound system, two microphones, James. So we can, and the sound is incredible that we have with this. And at his age, he's forgotten the last part of the question.
That's okay, Brian. Just with having to switch everything up because of COVID restrictions, what changes were necessary and what benefits did you potentially see from those necessitated changes?
Well, last year with virtuality entails, we were able to get people to tell from their home in Toronto, wherever. Now, those people, Norm Perrin, Anna Kurz, June Brown, and several others who told from home virtually last year are coming to Guelph. So they're we've attracted people this way. They've seen what we do, and they just want. Norman came once to hear Sarah. He took one look at the enabling gardens and he looked at me and said, "I'm going to tell here." So that's the beauty of the garden. And this year he will. I'd also like to talk about the, regardless of the profile of these people, up until now, it's all been voluntary. They have not been given any compensation. We hope to change that a little this year, but they receive a gift from the Woolly, a gift from downtown, and Planet Bean. I think, Trevor, we have to answer mention Planet Bean. They provide us with the coffee for the people, and that's a substantial that's a substantial amount that they give us, and we're still scrounging around after other donors who can give us goodies. So yeah, it's coming through.
You heard it right here on Breezy Breakfast. If you're looking for something new to support, the Tea and Tales could use a little bit of help so they can end up allowing the people that come and regale us with their stories the opportunity to be compensated for their time. So, Trevor, one of the things that you mentioned while we were, in our little discussion before anybody else got here, is you recently reached out to another group. And I'd be interested to know what else is available for people in the Enabling Gardens. What other potential partnerships are you hoping to get or might be available for the community?
Well, I've just reached out to Immigration Guelph because we really want to get more international flavor. We just want to promote this space and this opportunity for people to, post-COVID or just as we come into a time that we still meet in, or we can meet in person again safely. And we have this spot for it, so we're just trying to promote it. We work closely with our ARC Industries, Community Living, Kids Create, a Spark of Brilliance, a number of because part of our focus is really to offer gardening opportunities to people who may have cognitive or physical disabilities, or just love to garden as well too. And we just want to share the joy of gardening. It really is working with the soils and planting things and having that camaraderie, that companionship, that reducing isolation and just getting people out of their homes again is what we want to get people back to doing. And that's this focus on seniors, but also we have in attendance at the entails is we have buses of people with mobility issues come and park and from group homes and seniors and their caretakers and staff and parents also come as well too. So all are invited. And it is a friendly little group. I serve the coffee, yes, and percolate it, make it. 100 cups percolated. It's the biggest one I can find. And but then we also provide iced tea, lemonade, and hopefully people bring in treats. We don't have treats for everybody, but it's just we offer that. But we do insist that people bring their own mugs. It's waste-free, but also in time of COVID, I used to provide mugs in the past, you know, pre-2019, but we have to be extra cautious and careful, and so we're asking people to bring their own mugs and bring it back every week, and we refill it. And there's sugar cream and milk and a stir stick. A spoon, long as you don't lick it. And they get to be entertained by me as I serve it as well. And that's really what it is about, just community building, and it's free. We do ask for donations to help offset some of the costs, but we'd like to see more people come down.
Excellent. And Trevor, this is Guelph, so asking people to bring their own mugs is something that most of us are used to. One of the things that I meant to mention at the beginning of the show is this is the month of Pride for June, as well as Indigenous Month. And I know there's a lot of events that are happening around for both of those events that are asking people, please bring your own plates, bring your own cups, bring your own cutlery. It is the wave of the future. And I'm glad that Tea and Tales is a part of that. Brian, let us know just a little bit, what need does storytelling fill?
Storytelling has been a major push with the evolution of humanity, more so than the opposable thumb, because the opposable thumb allows you to hang on, whereas a story gives you something to hang on to. And stories evoke childhood memories, be them imaginary, of listening to the story that mom or dad told them as they were tucked into bed. Maybe it brings back memories of something they did as a kid or as a younger person or whatever. And maybe it helps them realize some dreams of, I wished I'd have gone there, or yeah. And it evokes memories. It evokes so many emotions within people. That's an awful answer, and it covers about 1.37% of what does a story do. So 1.36%. Okay, so yeah. So,
well, Brian, that is an excellent synopsis of why storytelling is so important to us as a society. And something that you guys mentioned a little bit earlier that I'd kind of like to get a take from our counselor, Phil Alt, who works with us here on Breezy. And you mentioned that basically the city is the landlord. So Phil, can you let us know a little bit about why you see this as such an important part of our city structure?
Thanks, Tanya. Sitting down here, beautiful Rise and Shine restaurant, having my breakfast. I want to state that I think the Enabling Garden is an incredibly important place for many, many people. Some of you will know the late Sandy Worley, professor of some significance at the University of Guelph. Sandy spent 20 odd years of his life suffering from multiple sclerosis and doing it quite bravely, I suppose, is the best way of putting it. The Enabling Garden gave him a lot of peace. And what I want to do is actually thank Tea and Tales, because I think Trevor and Brian and the whole crew have reinforced that the Enabling Gardens is a venue for people to go to when they need both peace and quiet and perhaps reflection, maybe just reflections on their own tales, maybe just reflections on a loved one that's passed. It's a place for a fair bit of sanctuary and meditation. And I think that we have done well in Guelph by putting it there. And it's odd, I mentioned it to you yesterday, Morgan. It's almost anomalous to just be in the middle of this big park. There's this tiny little oasis of quiet and solitude that I think speaks well to the city's mandate to create quiet and safe places for people. So hats off to the Tea and Tail crew for making it even more important.
Thank you so much, Phil, for giving us that perspective from the city. And so, Brian, you said that there are 13 weeks that is expanded from what used to be 11. You said it starts on June 17th. So my math is not good in my head this early in the morning. When does it run through until?
Let me see. 13 times 7 is 91, I think. So that makes it September the 9th.
I'm glad that you had that at the tip of your tongue, because I could never have figured it out.
Morgan, a couple of things. I didn't answer a question about the kids program.
Yes.
Saya Van Geest is looking after that. She's hoping to do two separate programs for kids. She's still working. We had hoped initially to put it on July the 1st. That could mean some pretty intense parking problems, etc., with everything else going on in the park on July the 1st. So she's rethinking that. Secondly, those certificates. I don't know whether the city, Marty Williams realizes it, and the Woolley realizes it. When downtown business gives the tellers from out of town, and 19 of the 26 come from out of town, a certificate for $25, then where are they going to spend it? They have to stay in Guelph to spend it. A $10 certificate to eat at the Woolley, well, they can't take it to downtown Toronto. They're going to stay, and they're going to stay and have lunch at the Woolley. So this is the kind of thing that we're trying to promote. And we just, apart from that, I can't wait. 2 weeks from tomorrow, we're starting.
I'm looking forward to it.
4 weeks from tomorrow, I think James and I will be on stage, and there's usually a few songs. I have no idea what he might be singing for us this year, plus a few of his misfortunes as he travels the world and singing. And sometimes there's a little silly buggers going on when we get together and do a couple of other things. So yeah.
Well, you've let us know a little bit about the organization, and I know you're one of the tellers, but you're so involved in it. I was wondering if maybe James might come on and just describe to us a little bit about what it's like to be a teller at Tea and Tales. What's your experience been?
Thanks, Morgan. One of the things that I've always been inspired by about Tea and Tales, it's kind of its own subculture, would you say, Brian? Like, I've been honored to have been a teller there quite a number of times now. And it's like meeting old friends and, okay, this is Tea and Tales because it has its own setting. It has its own roster of tellers, but it has its own crowd that comes out, and they seem to nurture one another too. And it is quite a magical spot. So I think... I remember when I was first invited, I go, what do you mean 10 o'clock in the morning? I'm a huge international rock star. I don't do that. And then realizing that's a really unique time to do it too. And it's a unique thing to be able to focus on the art of storytelling itself, and which is something that we need to explore more. I heard you ask before what storytelling brings to us. My friend Thomas King had a whole series, the Massey lectures he did on storytelling, saying that we are nothing but the stories that we tell. If you take those away from us, who are we? So it's nice to tap into that ancient tradition too. Thanks.
Thanks for that perspective, James. And Brian, I think that brought something to mind for you. What did you want to say?
It did. Yes, I think we did start at 10 o'clock at one point, but due to the consideration we have for international rock stars and others, we now start at 10:30 promptly. But for those seniors who arrive early, we are in the process of lining up performance-ready students from the Suzuki School of Strings, who will be there from 10 until 10:30, just background music. One of them is Bridget Walsh. She was featured in Guelph Today a little while ago. She made a vow to practice for 1,000 days in a row, and this will be day 900 and something that she'll be in the garden performing. So they're not kids who got their violin last night and they're out playing tomorrow. These people are performance ready. So yeah, it's a little addition, a little depth, a little more class.
And creating...
Not that we need class when we've got people like James and Jay and others and Trevor, the maitre d', serving coffee and cookies and everything else. So yeah.
It sounds like you're working on creating great community as well as continuing a tradition that everyone knows from childhood, as whether it was being read to or just having stories told to you as a child. It is the earliest form of communication that we learn, I believe.
Yeah, it is. And unfortunately, it's still one of the best kept secrets in Guelph. A lot of people, no matter how hard we try, a lot of people don't know that we're there. When I speak to people at the city for whatever reason, something to do with it, quite often I have to explain to them what Tea and Tales are, or Tea and Tales is, sorry. And but we're getting there. We will get there.
And this is going to go a long way for that too, because Brian, remember, this will be rebroadcast on CFRU on Monday at 9 o'clock and also available as a podcast. Somebody mentioned a little while ago that we also have Jay Wilson, who is a teller. Jay, if you wouldn't mind, can you give us your perspective of what the experience of being a teller for Tea and Tales has been for you?
I'd be pleased to do that. The Enabling Garden, I come at telling as an actor, so setting is important to me. And the Enabling Garden provides that setting. It with the river behind you, the beautiful garden, the ambience, the vibe, if you will, that's created there, provides that perfect setting. And then all I have to do is add the voice. And then the whole thing just opens up. And it's such a magical place. James had mentioned that he's told there many times. I try and go every year if I can, simply because it's such a beautiful place to tell. And again, as somebody mentioned, the audience, they're a wonderful audience. They listen, they're attentive, they enjoy themselves, they want to be there, they want to hear these stories. And it really is, it's the highlight of my season. I enjoy that place so much. So come and listen to some stories there. It's a really magical place.
Well, you've definitely sold me on the magic. I have been in the Enabling Gardens a couple of times, just walking around and enjoying the peace and quiet. Now that I've heard a little bit more about how magical it is, I'm even more looking forward to these 13 weeks of learning more about storytelling. I've always been an avid reader, so to have the opportunity to sit and listen to stories will be great. So I wanted to give Trevor a little bit of space to just let us know about anything else that is currently planned for the Enabling Gardens over the summer.
Thank you. Morgan, our horticultural therapist is reaching out to develop programming. We were just at the Garden plant sale, the Arboretum, last Saturday, and we had a lot of people come up. And we're trying to get people to register for the workshops. And if you go to our website, enablinggarden.org, you can look up the horticultural therapy programming, and you can also contact, there's the link there to contact the registered horticultural therapist. And we have two staff. We have a volunteer coordinator who herds the cats and all the work gets done within the garden, and then the horticultural therapist.
Trevor, can you just state out loud for the listening audience how to find you?
Oh, okay. Our website is enablinggarden.org. So it's all one word. And the garden is made up of many gardens. There's no S. It's the Enabling Garden. But it's largely all Ontario plants, historical I've got to speak about the tree that people present before, where the presenters, behind them is this wonderful ash tree. It's just gorgeous. And it survived emerald ash borer, and it's come back. And it is just a wonderful tree. And that's where the magic happens. I've got to talk about the magic as well, too. One of the horticultural therapy programs that we have, and it's not only for children, but they develop and place little fairy gardens around in the garden, and it is so cute. But they're there; it's ephemeral. They move. And children come back, and every week build on their fairy gardens. It is so neat to watch. It's kind of fun. We're trying to do something in the evening, like early dusk or something like that, and have a performance sometime in the future. We're still thinking. We're just coming out of COVID, so a lot of things are in flux for us. And I do have to make, if you are coming to Tea and Tales, please, if you wear a mask, you are welcome. Please wear a mask. If you just be comfortable with the spacing as well too. We have a very vulnerable population due to their age, so we want everybody to be safe.
Thank you for that reminder that although we seem to be out of COVID, there are still those of us that wish to remain a little bit safer and keep wearing those masks. Brian, it looked like some of what Trevor was saying sparked another thought in your brain.
Well, actually, I was pointing to the tree.
Okay.
That's the tree there. But while we're here, I forgot to mention, you talk about attendees and so on. I do have to mention Phil because he doesn't tell, well, he tells lots of stories, I think, and he could tell lots of stories, but that in-camera bit would probably inhibit him. But Phil shows up every year to Tea and Tales. He's perhaps, being a former educator, I don't know, or maybe he realizes the importance of stories, but I do have to mention him. Sometimes when he and James are there, let's not talk about that. So, yeah.
and I have to give Phil some equal time to respond to that. Go ahead, Phil.
Thanks, Brian. You're right, I could tell tales, but they're better for around a campfire, whether it's in someone's illegal backyard or elsewhere. I could tell the tale about the time that I rafted down the Yellowstone River and Mount St. Helens exploded. That was quite a tale. I could tell the tale about when I was in Berlin, when the Berlin Wall came down, and my friend and I broke in under the Brandenburg Gate, and I'm the first Canadian that I'm aware that went under the Brandenburg Gate since World War II. There's all sorts of opportunities. They're generally filled with larceny, climbing the water tower just in Brian's backyard when I was a kid. It was one hell of a tale for kids, probably one that should remain quiet because we don't want them doing it. But there's all sorts of tales in everyone's life. And I think that that's most important. Tanya had asked me to talk about the Canadian tradition of tale telling, and I think it's very important. I looked up the Leacock Award for which James has been nominated, and what's really interesting is to go to Wikipedia and take a look at the number of Canadian authors and the names that arise there. James is not the first person from Guelph to be nominated for that award and hopefully win it. We all know Tom King, but I'm not certain that most people know Joey Slinger, who came from Guelph as well, who won it twice. Similarly, let's not forget that John McCrae was a storyteller. He told the tale of soldiers fallen in World War I. And we have this long, long tradition that I think is very well summed up by Margaret Atwood in her seminal thesis on Canadian literature and history survival. And it's one that's become international. And we've seen it just recently in her most recent television works as well, where essentially what we are is a nation of survivors. Even if it's William Kinsella in Shoeless Joe, we are a nation that tries to survive and address the challenges in front of us. And we tell those in our stories always. So for me, the Enabling Gardens and Tea and Tales are part of that Canadian mosaic that makes us a proud country of storytellers that even percolates into the musical world and into our art as well. So thank you, Trevor, thank you, Brian, and thank you everyone for being involved in allowing us to make our tall tales something that's part of our lifestyle.
Thank you so much, Phil. So Brian, can you, just before we move on to Breezy Books, let us know who is in the lineup for June?
Oh, wow. And where did we go? Just one moment. For June, we are starting off with a local teller. It'll be his first time, Don Conabare. You may have met Don if you were speeding through the city or doing something illegal. He's a retired police officer. And he will be telling, along with Brenda Byers, from Hamilton, another experienced teller. On the 24th, we have the Caulfields, Judy and Paul Caulfield. They're a professional pair from Brampton who will be telling, and they will be telling with Cecilia Vincenzo. Cecilia comes from Kitchener. This will be her first time also, and she's from Ecuador, and her tales are pretty wonderful. So yeah, the Caulfields have been here for many years also. They tell and they sing. So, and then the following week on July the 1st, we have James Gordon, with or without an oven mitt, I'm not too sure, and I'll be telling along with him. So, and then we go from there. If it's allowable, I will put a blurb up each week on Breezy Breakfast and on the website to let you know who's telling.
Absolutely, that would be wonderful to have that. And I think this is a perfect time to switch over to our actual book discussion. Now, we've already mentioned a couple of times that James has been nominated for an award. And before we get a little bit more about what that is, I would love to hear from Susan Ratcliffe. I know you are an avid reader, and I'd love to hear what it is you're planning on reading this summer, or what you'd recommend for others to read. Susan.
Hello, everybody. I'm leaving the picture up under my name right now because a lot of you may not know that this woman is one of the first of Guelph storytellers. I'd like to quote, I think Trevor said it, when I speak to people at the city, they don't know who we are. And many of you may not know of Eleanor Glynn. This is her picture. I just love the picture. It's not me when I'm dressed up, that not at all. And she, her first book was called 3 Weeks, written in 1907, and she shocked the world with it. Eleanor grew up at 345 Harcourt Road. And there's a lot of stories I could tell you. You have to come on one of the walking tours to hear them. But she and her sister Lucille took the world by storm. If you watch Downton Abbey, you were watching her sister's designs on the early shows. So 3 weeks shocked the world with its story of a woman who had a passionate affair with a young man for 3 weeks. Her next book was 6 weeks, so it got more exciting. And she, you may know her not by name, but by one of her books called The It Girl. So she defined that kind of look in the 1920s. She also was a screenwriter. So I thought I'd just start briefly and tell you about Eleanor Glynn. Her books are kind of hard to get hold of now. The last name is G-L-Y-N. I'd like to talk about two others briefly of our storytellers. The first one is one person whose name you may know, but you may not know what his work covers. So I want to tell you about Ed Butts. I hope everybody knows about Ed Butts. You may have read Wartime, backwards, the First World War in a Canadian Town. Ed Butts has written close to 40 different books. If you want books about what bodyguards do, about crime and criminals, he's the one that talked about Rocco Perry at the Albion and made sure you knew it wasn't Al Capone. He's written about lighthouses. He's written about Sheraton nurseries. If you want a really interesting local author, I'd encourage you to read and to buy Ed's books because they're really, really interesting. And the second one I'd like to, the third one I'd like to talk about is not a Guelph author, but from an area near Kingston. And that's Helen Humphreys. And you can read about 20 of her books. This one, for example, is The Ghost Orchard, and it talks about all the different apple varieties that are in Ontario. She wrote one about the visit to an herbal garden, and you see all the beautiful illustrations and what herbs meant. And the most recent one is called, I forgot the odd title, Machine Without Horses. And it's a novel about, based on the life story of a Scottish woman from 1905 onwards, who was a worldwide fly tyer for salmon fishing, set up in the remote wilds of Scotland. So Helen is relatively local. So I'd like to encourage you to read local and support local authors like James this summer, who you can promote books and promote our community by doing that. Thanks, Morgan. Thanks, Tanya.
Thank you so much, Susan. It's always awesome to hear about local artists. And speaking of local, our own James Gordon just nominated for the Stephen Leacock Memorial Medal for Humor on the long list. James, what were you nominated for? Tell us a bit about it.
I'll get a copy. Maybe I better put my video on. There. It's called The Ark of the Oven Mitt. It's a novel. It's an album. My first novel. And I'm very honored by this. And it's, I guess it must be humorous if it got nominated for the award. But its little angle is that there are 36 songs that go with the book. And there's a QR code in the front. So you just hold your phone up. And when it comes in the book, you listen to the song too. So I think that's, I had a lot of fun doing that. And knowing that it's got a little bit of recognition, I can't wait to see that. It's something I want to dedicate a little bit more time to. COVID was a good time to write, but I want to keep the habit going. Thanks.
Thank you so much, James. Really looking.
Oh, and you can get it at the bookshelf, Barb.
Yep. Yeah, we can definitely get it at the bookshelf. I do believe you're actually delivering a few extra copies down there later today. Is that what you were telling me?
That's the plan.
All righty. Well, fresh from James, new copies of The Ark of the Oven Mitt down at the bookshelf later today. Next up, we have Juanita with a few suggestions. Juanita, you're always such an avid reader, and I love hearing about what you're reading because you've got such an incredibly broad range of what you enjoy reading. So what's up for this summer?
Well, I will say I did go to the bookshelf and I did get a copy of James's book, and it's even a signed copy. So there may or may not still be some of those left. The three I'm going to talk about today, one by Liz Plank is For the Love of Men. And it's about toxic masculinity and how even men are not really getting very far with toxic masculinity. And along the same lines, I'm reading Ijeoma Oluo's Mediocre, The Dangerous Legacy of White Male America. And it talks about entitlement. It talks about failing upward. And I haven't got too far into it, but I'm sure it will be a fascinating read and probably explain a lot about where we are at now. And the other one I'm reading is by Ambrose Perry. It's called The Art of Dying. It is a second book in the series by Ambrose Perry, who is in fact Christopher Brookmeyer, who's my favorite writer of tartan noir, and his partner, Marissa Heitzman, who is an anesthetist in Scotland. And it's about the history of medical science and medical research. And it's a good story, but also lots of things to learn about. So those are my three books for now.
Excellent, Juanita. And if it is okay with you, the first one that you mentioned, when you're done with it, if you wouldn't mind lending that to me, I would love to learn more about that and maybe have a discussion about it afterward.
Cool.
Thank you so much. All right. Next up, we have Trevor Barton. Trevor, what are you reading and recommending for others to delve into this fine summer?
Well, I'm reading Little Green Lies and Other BS, and I will be polite, from John Mullinder. He is actually the he's the executive director of the Paper Packaging Environmental Council. I am a waste professional for 35 years as well too, and I have been part of the Little Green Lies in defense of recycling, composting, and everything, especially with the city of Guelph, where I started in 1987. I'm actually, as I read this book, yes, these are little green lies. We're trying to get people to understand, and it's the nuances where I spend most of my time in my professional career is explaining, and I'm not a plastic chemist, it's just explaining the difference. Yes, and we're hearing all these stories, these environmental claims, and I'm in the middle of a battle with Lysol, with a greenwashing claim right now through the Competition Bureau, and this book is actually so timely. But it's everything about deforestation, replanting, regeneration, and plastics, and as well as other materials that are so challenging to recycle. And it's actually a book on extended producer responsibility. You and I as consumers should not have to we pay when we purchase something, and we pay for that package, but we are not responsible for the Coca-Colas of this world with their packaging from cradle to grave. Why do we as municipalities have to pay as ratepayers? So it's very, very timely, and I'm not trying to get political. It's actually a really good read, and it's fun, and he's got some other books too. If ever anybody remembers Farley Mowat, The Boat That Wouldn't Float, well, Brian is a Kiwi from New Zealand, or sorry, Brian, John is a Kiwi from New Zealand, and he's also got if you go to one of his previous books as well, too, I've got six of them. He's a great writer, good friend of mine as well, too, and writes about the industry that I am still working at, and I really good read for this summer, I think.
That is awesome, Trevor. And that has sparked something in our own Tanya. So Tanya, what's your comment?
Yeah, it's just a little story about recycling. So I was talking to about recycling with my mom, and she told me that back in the 60s, she saw the most amazing thing at the grocery store. The woman in front of her bought her items and had her own glass jars with her. And she scooped out the peanut butters and the jams and pickles all into her own jars and left the manufactured jars at the grocery store. And the cashier said, "Why are you doing that?" And this lady said, "I paid for the food. I didn't pay for the packaging."
Wow. Some radical recycling back in the 60s. Thank you for sharing that, Tanya. It's amazing the different things that we've gone through over the years. Thank you for sharing that, Trevor, and sparking that thought within Tanya. Now we're going to move on to Kevin Bowman. What are you reading this summer and recommending for others to do as well?
I'm just starting a trilogy of sorts. So I'm just about to start reading Jody Wilson Raybould's book, Indian in the Cabinet, Speaking Truth to Power. And I figured if I'm going to read that, I should also read Selena Cesar Chavez, Can You Hear Me Now? And Jane Philpott also has a book. Now, the first two ladies, their book is about the experience of being in a political party and then getting kicked out of the Liberal Party because they had the audacity to disagree publicly with the Prime Minister. Jane also got kicked out of the party for the same reason, but her book's not about that. Her book is about COVID, because as a doctor, she was on the front lines and trying to deal with that. And so the book is about kind of the systemic failure of our healthcare system to deal with that, the pandemic, very well. So yeah, that's my summer reading, is those three books.
Awesome, Kevin. Thank you. It's great to highlight Canadian authors and public figures in that way. Next up, Phil, what are you planning on hoping others read this summer?
Well, Morgan, I'm going to start off with a couple of old favorites of mine that I've read in the past and that I think are still quite current. The first one is Sophie's World, which is essentially a narrative of philosophy told through the eyes of a young girl who's given a challenge to discover whom she is by reading various philosophers. The reason that I think this is good is that when I was teaching philosophy, I used it, and it inspired a number of students to take philosophy. I had always believed that philosophy was almost impossible to teach to young kids, but they got it, and one of whom actually became the president of the University of Toronto Press, located here in Guelph. Leslie Demma is her name, and some of you might know her. She studied Nietzsche and a number of others, and the other thing that's important about it is that I think that reading philosophy helps us to ground ourselves in the world, and is good, seriously, very good therapy for people. It's not a hard read. It simplifies many philosophical concepts that people are often afraid of. I always said that I had the best job in the world because I got to teach philosophy, and everybody was afraid to ask me any questions. And I mean people that were supposed to evaluate me. I never did get evaluated, and I managed to destroy the minds of many kids. So that one's a good one. The other one is The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Doug Adams, I think, was tremendously prophetic in many of the things that he predicted. Adams delved into quantum physics. He delved into such things as our cell phones, which we all use, and which we need to recognize are truly The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. He delved into artificial intelligence with his talk about manic and depressed robots. It's good light reading with a very serious side to it as well, if you're into the incredibly complicated world of physics. if you're into natural science, the one that I am going to read by Peter Ward is entitled Lamarck's Revenge. My wife, Liz, who's a biologist, almost insisted that I read this because Lamarck's Revenge is a challenge to Darwin's theories of evolution, which come from Lamarck, whom I read when I was doing my doctoral studies ages ago. But let me just tell you what's important about it. It's about epigenetics, a complex process that paleontologist and astrobiologist Peter Ward breaks down for general readers. He uses the epigenetic paradigm to re-examine how the history of our species from deep time to the outbreak of the Black Plague and into the present has left its marks on our physiology, behavior, and intelligence. Most alarming are chapters about epigenetic changes we are undergoing now, triggered by toxins, environmental pollutants, famine, poor nutrition, and overexposure to violence. What he's essentially arguing is there are changes that we need to recognize are occurring that really are seriously affected by our environment. And some of you might be familiar with the great Canadian storyteller, David Cronenberg, who has a new movie out, Crimes of the Future, which is all about epigenetics. And let's not kid ourselves. We're worried about plastics in the water. We're worried about our future genetics as well. And that's it for me, Morgan.
Thank you so much, Phil. And through putting out my little appeal in the chat, Jay has decided that he would like to share a couple of books with us. Jay.
Well, listening to Phil, especially regarding that last book, sometimes we need a little bit of comic relief. So I'd like to mention a book by Dan Needles called With Axe and Flask. Dan Needles is the author of the Wingfield Farm shows that are performed all around Canada. And he's a Leacock Award winner as well. And he has a wonderful spin on Canadian history, which I find incredibly amusing. Another book I'd like to mention is by somebody who's a little bit difficult to find. His name is Bob Green. He's an author from Galt, Ontario, my hometown. He wrote a wonderful book called Eavesdroppings, Stories from Small Town When Sin Was Fun. And these are amusing anecdotes of local people. There's actually a story that I'm going to be telling at Tea and Tales called Taxi, which is from that book. And finally, a third book, which is almost impossible to find, which is called Lilt of Laughter, Trace of Tears. And this is a collection of Irish tales written by an old friend of my family, Charlene Harold. It was a self-published book, so a very limited run. I'm not sure that you'd even be able to find a copy of it. I was fortunate in that Charlene sent me a copy and she wrote a little comment in it. Charlene died in 2009. And as I reread these stories, I realize that they are monologues. They're meant to be read out loud. They're meant to be told. And it's actually, I think, a wonderful piece of theater. I think it would make a wonderful two-person show. A guy and a girl telling these Irish tales. Now, it would have to be for an actor who can play somebody from the age of 19 or so up to the age of 86 plus. And these are wonderful, gentle tales in the Irish way. You know, there's such a wonderful lilt to the way that they speak and a wonderful turn of phrase. So I'm going to be telling a couple of these at Tea and Tales so we can product sample what these stories are like. But I find that they really touch my soul in a very gentle way. And she has such a wonderful way of telling a story about human life. Highly recommend those. And maybe in September, if you see me at Tea and Tales, you'll hear a little bit of Lilt of Laughter, Trace of Tears.
Thank you so much for that, Jay. And humor and laughter is so important in especially difficult times. We've got to find those moments where we can grab hold of a little bit of joy. For me, one of the ways of grabbing a little bit of joy is by giving gratitude. So I'm not actually planning on doing a whole bunch of reading this summer. What I'm planning on doing is showing my gratitude. So I received this wonderful 5-minute daily journal, and that's what I'm committing for my sort of read this year, is a read into me, finding out who I am and what this journey I'm about to embark on will encompass. And who knows, maybe I'll end up writing a book on it, and I could end up with a Stephen Leacock nomination too. Who knows? James has done it. Lots of other authors here. Maybe there's somebody here today or in our listening audience that will end up on that list later. We're getting towards the end of the show, and before we wrap it up with announcements, Tanya has a few books that she's going to share with us. And then Tanya, just move right into the announcements when you're done.
Okay, certainly. Thank you very much for the opportunity to share my books. So the first book I'd like to share is it's a calendar of wisdom written by Leo Tolstoy. And I was really excited to find this book because they are daily thoughts to nourish the soul. He writes, it is written by him, and he has selections from various sacred texts. For example, today, I'll just read, a person who stands on his tiptoes cannot stand long, and a person who is too proud of himself cannot set a good example. And Lao Tzu said that. He who is looking for wisdom is already wise, and he who thinks that he has found wisdom is a stupid man. And that is Eastern wisdom. And then so Leo Tolstoy writes, no exterior force can make you humble. There is only one way to be humble. Do not think about yourself, but about how you can serve God and others. So I find these are an excellent way to start the day. I also would like to talk about a collection of short stories. The first is in honor of May, which was Asian Heritage Month, I chose a story, a collection of stories by Jack Wang, and it's called We Two Alone. And these stories all have the Chinese immigrant experience as a foundation, but the stories are universal in nature. And anyone who has read King Lear will find the titular story very moving. The second collection of short stories is by Gwen Kirby. And of course I saw this title and I had to read it. It's called Shit Cassandra Saw. And we're talking Cassandra of Greek mythology. The women in these stories have had it, and their stories let us know how they deal with their lots in life. The first story talks about the Trojan War in the past and Trojans in the future. I'd also like to let you guys know that this book was recommended to me. It's called Piranesi by Susanna Clark. And actually it is the book that, I didn't realize this, it is the book that will be in the Guelph Public Library book club talked about at the end of June, which I'm so pleased to hear about. I was recommended this book and I started reading it and I thought, I have never read anything like this in my life. It's a mystery. It's sort of a fantasy type book. You don't really know what's going on. And then when you start to put the pieces together as the main character is trying to put the pieces together, you're both trying to solve a mystery. And you get to the end. It's a quick read. It's not that, you can read it in a couple nights. I read it again to see, okay, let's enjoy it a second time. So I highly recommend this. You can try a different genre of book, and it's not going to take up a lot of your time, but it's really going to make you think. I just finished a tome. Like, I looked at this book, I have been passing it by. This is a 600 page book. And I thought, oh my God, do I have the time to read a War and Peace length book? It's called The Absolute Book by Elizabeth Knox. And, you know, you're reading it for about 100 pages and you're thinking, what is going on here? Much like the Piranesi book, but it is beautifully written. It's about revenge. It's about libraries. It's about our world, otherworldliness. It's not quite a fantasy book. I wouldn't call it, put it into that genre. It's a literary, it's written so beautifully. And I recommend it because it's something completely different. Like, I don't even know what category to place this book. I would recommend it. And even though it looks very long, and it is, but it's a very easy read. But I would still recommend you take the time to enjoy the writing because it is exquisite. And as for things that I'd like to read, The Candy House by Jennifer Egan for nonfiction, The Stone Reader, Modern Philosophy in 133 Arguments. I haven't started that, but boy, I'm excited. And you guys might remember the last time we did a book segment, I promoted a book called Humans, A Brief History of How We Effed It All Up by Tom Phillips. Well, he has a follow-up called Truth, A Brief History of Total Bull. And I'm looking so forward to reading this as well because he has a lovely writing style and I'll learn a lot and it'll be fun to read. Thank you very much.
I would like to extend our heartfelt thanks to Brian Holstein and Trevor Barton for enlightening us about what Tea and Tales is, how it fills a need within our community, and also what the Enabling Gardens is, or sorry, the Enabling Garden. We were very clear. It is a garden with many little gardens inside it. So I'm looking forward to starting on the 17th of June, heading up to Riverside Park and beginning to learn more about the wonderful world of storytelling. I'd also like to give a quick shout out to James and Jay for sharing with us what it's like to actually be a teller at Tea and Tales. Hopefully we'll see lots of people out and lots of new faces this summer. Let's make this something that puts Guelph on the map even more. Tanya, what are our announcements for this week? Oh, sorry, one other thing I just remembered. And Phil and I were just having this conversation. We keep forgetting. People, if you would like to head down to Rise and Shine and start having breakfast with Phil, he's made a commitment to get down there on as much of a weekly basis as he possibly can. And Bev misses us. Bev wants us back. So anybody that wants to go down, doors are usually open by 7:45 and you're welcome to come on in, bring a tablet or your cell phone. The Wi-Fi is available to hook up. You can still see everything on here and we're getting closer to figuring out a true hybrid of Breezy Breakfast. Thank you, Tanya. Now for the announcements.
Okay, so there is a committee of the whole meeting on June 7th, and on the agenda, Guelph is to be certified as a bird-friendly city. The water supply master plan update is on the agenda, and there will be a cost-sharing agreement with the County of Wellington, Township of Pushlands, and Guelph Aramasa Township. And Ted will be happy to know that the 2022 Wastewater Treatment and Biosolids Management Master Plan update is also on the agenda. And finally, the taxi rate increase of 6.7% effective July 2022. Have your say with regards to transit. There are going to be some digital real-time arrival information signs at the busy transit hubs and stops. And please let the city know what other information you'd like to have on these signs. How can they make the information accessible? And where should the signs be put? There is a survey, so please complete it by June the 12th. Have your say about the OR lands. What do you like about the OR lands? What are the important sites to you and why? There's a virtual open house on June the 8th from 6:30 to 8 p.m. And please have your say by June the 22nd. Have your say about Metrolinx. Ah, yes, the railway crossings return. Alma Street, Edinburgh Road, Yorkshire Street, Glasgow Street, M. Watson Road. Ask your questions and make comments by June the 22nd. The Town and Gown Toastmasters is having an impromptu speaking workshop. It is on Wednesday, June the 8th at 7 to 8:15 a.m. Please email townandgown2000@gmail.com to register. The speakers that you will get feedback from are Tim O'Connor and Jessica Yu. The Municipal Campaign School is having a workshop called Raising Women's Voices. It's on Saturday, June the 18th from 9 till noon, held at the 10C Community Room on 42 Carden Street. This will be a morning of information sharing and networking. It is a free event. In order to register, please Google Raising Women's Voices Guelph to get to the Eventbrite site. And finally, next week on Breezy Breakfast, we're having a focused open mic. It's going to be a provincial election post-mortem. And we have a special guest, Aisha Jangir. She is running against Doug Ford in the Etobicoke riding. So it'll be very interesting to hear what she has to say about leading up to the election.
Thank you so much, Tanya. And I'm part of the Town and Gown Toastmasters. Anyone that wants to come out about impromptu speaking, the people that are going to be giving the feedback are amazing. If you can get out and have breakfast with Phil next week, please do so. And you never know, Aisha may not be the only guest that we have. There might be somebody else. We're just not sure yet.
We just aren't sure.
If you haven't already voted, please get out and do so today. With that, have a great week, everybody.
That's all for today. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to our organizing committee, Kevin Bowman, Tanya Gavard, Morgan Dandy, and Phil Out. Music for the Breezy Breakfast has been provided by Jules Sturm. I'm Jia Yu Yan, and I produce the Breezy Breakfast podcast.